I remember hearing my doctor telling the other team of doctors her uterus ruptured and the baby would have been breached. I exhaled and I asked, "Is the baby out? Is he out? Is my baby out?" Complete silence. No one answered me. And it felt like an eternity went by when my doctor came to my side, like to the side of me where I could actually see him face to face, and said, "Your baby is out, but..." Welcome back to the Once Upon Her Mind podcast. This is part two of my labor and delivery, or birthing story, if you will. We get down to the rigid details of what happened after I was wheeled back to the OR. Stay tuned. But he did not have a heartbeat, nor was he breathing. We were able to resuscitate him, and he is stable now. I exhaled again and was relieved to know that my baby was alive. I didn't quite understand in the moment what my doctor said. Very blunt language, he said, "Your baby was dead and now he's alive." Something else that he mentioned to me is that he was gray or purple when he came out, which was a huge indication that he lost a lot of oxygen. At this point, the doctors are still operating on me. My doctor also comes to me and says, "Miss Murray, your uterus ruptured and we are going to have to remove it along with your fallopian tubes. We need to perform a partial hysterectomy. Do you consent to this?" I mean, what else was I supposed to say? "No, I don't consent to this. Stop right now." Yeah. Of course, I agreed, and they proceeded with the surgery. Now, this surgery took 3 hours long. And about every 15 minutes, I would ask, "Are you guys almost done? Are you guys almost done?" And they'd be like, "Yeah, well, yeah, we're almost done." Just lying through their teeth. I do remember my husband coming into the OR, and this was a moment that I will never forget. In this moment, he sat by my side. I can only see from my peripheral vision to the left of me where he was sitting, and he was just clenched is the word that comes to mind. Like, you know how someone just clenches their body up and they ball their fist up and they're just kind of like bearing down? Like, I don't know how to explain it. Almost like an intense prayer, or an intense cry of frustration. That's what I saw. And he was crying, and my husband does not cry. I think I can probably count 3 times I've ever seen him cry, maybe. And I just remember saying, "Babe, it's okay. I'm okay. I'm okay. I promise I'm okay," you know. And I wasn't okay per se, but in that moment, I had enough strength to utter those words. And I was like, "How's the baby? Is he okay? Is he okay?" And he was like, "He's stable." And I kept hearing this word, "stable." I'm like, "Okay, cool," you know. So my husband's there with me. He's calmed down, and we're talking. And he's telling me how beautiful the baby was. And there was another doctor that told me the same thing. But I am skipping some very important details. Let's rewind. When I went into labor that Friday night, I was the only woman laboring on the fourth floor, at I don't even know what it's called, the family birthing place, the birthplace, family birthing place center at Patewood. I don't know, look it up, Google it. But I was the only woman laboring. And so when this C-section turned emergent, every doctor that was on the fourth floor from their practice rushed into the OR, scrubbed in, and got to work. I know this because I saw a little bit of it, and I know it because I was told it. Something else that happened was a couple of, wow, I didn't realize how intense this was going to be to tell. Give me a second. So I was told that a couple of seconds after I got into the OR, there were like flashing lights and like alarms going off on the fourth floor, and that's actually when all the other doctors, you know, that were present from their practices, you know, different OBGYNs share, you know, the hospital floor for their women that are giving birth. So those doctors rushed into the OR. At that time, the baby had been, you know, taken out and was unresponsive. That's when I was told my husband was just kind of like, my husband and my two sister friends that were present were like stunned. They were just standing outside of the room I was laboring in, just like frozen. But at the same time, watching these doctors fly, like sprinting, you know, to the OR. As devastating as it sounds, what I can say is, oh, what favor is on our lives to be laboring, be the only person laboring that Friday night, the only person laboring that Saturday, and the only person delivering that Saturday. It's like the Lord cleared the entire fourth floor so that all attention could be on us, so we can have all hands on deck. That just, I'm still baffled by that. How he sees me as royalty, and how he sees Glendon Raphael as a little king coming up in the world, and the way he ushered him into the world. It looks devastating to us, but I mean, come on now. Glendon Raphael had every doctor on that floor at his ever beck and call, and the anesthesia team was deep in that OR. This was no typical, you know, emergency C-section. You know, C-section has its team, emergency C-section has, you know, maybe some more people. I don't know. This is my first one, and only one. But looking at that is so beautiful to me. I can say I was served in such a beautiful way as well, just with the nurses that were in the OR, as well as the anesthesiologist that was just making sure I had what I needed, you know, as far as pain and helping me not to vomit in my hair. I forgot to tell you about that part. Yeah, so as I was being wheeled to the OR, I'm like, oh, I gotta throw up, because I had an epidural, but from that catheter, they were able to shoot some medicine in me to give me a spinal. So all that at one time, yeah, it'll mess you up. So I gotta throw up. They were like, oh, throw up, honey, it's fine. Just throw up. And I'm like, it's like, don't throw up in your hair. Totally threw up in my hair. But anyway, so the baby was intubated immediately and transported to Greenville Memorial. Meanwhile, I'm still in surgery and it is a lot going on. There's a lot of taking out and a lot of repairing. Yes. So my uterus was removed. My fallopian tubes were removed. I still have my ovaries, my cervix, and my vagina. My vagina had to be repaired because it split down the back. Yep. That just hurts me just talking about it. So that was a very invasive, intense surgery. There was a moment where, Jesus. Whew. There was a moment where the anesthesiologist that was to the right of me was like, Miss Murray, we're going to give you some medication. It might make you go to sleep. And I'm like, no, I don't want to go to sleep. Because all I could think about was the trauma from brain surgery and the fear. Not even brain surgery, excuse me, meningitis and the fear of like not waking up again. The trauma from all of that, the brain surgery to the meningitis to the second brain surgery, I just was so afraid. I'm like, man, I'm scared. And so I'm just telling her, no, she's steady pushing the medicine in. And my husband's like, it's fine, just go to sleep. I'm like, you don't understand. I might not wake up. I am terrified. I just remember like staring into the ceiling and there were like lights in the ceiling. And I'm like, no. And I'm like fighting with everything in me not to go to sleep. That was interesting. So I'm staring at the light and the light just kind of fades out, but it fades into another light. So it doesn't I don't fade to black, you know, it's like I fade into white. All my media people that do video work, video editing know exactly what I'm talking about. But just imagine staring at one light and then it fading into an even brighter light. Okay. So I'm in this brighter light and it's like, feels like sky, just sky. I don't remember vividly, but what I feel and what I think about when I think of it is like soft cotton candy type of sky, like just pink and orangish hues of like sky and clouds, you know, soft, fluffy, not fluffy. Clouds aren't fluffy. That's just the cartoon version of our minds that we perceive. But it was just like, you know, these just big old white clouds in the midst of like a sunset looking sky. I don't know, like pinkish, orangish, something like that. And then I was like talking to something, right? And at first I didn't really realize what I was talking to until I like came back and then took some time to process it all. But I was asking this thing, like, are we going to be with the Lord? I said it just like, are we going to be with the Lord? And the thing said no, but it did not say it verbally. I did not hear it audibly. It was just like a telepathic communication. I knew exactly what it was saying and it knew what I was saying, but I was speaking out loud. Like, are we going to be with the Lord? And then it told me no. And I was just kind of resting up there with it. Like, I was just high, like not high as in like, you know, off drugs or like intoxicated off anything, not like that, but high, like literally, like physically high up beyond the sky, I feel like. And I was just hanging out there for a while. And then I started to hear like the noise from the OR. Like it was almost like the volume was turning up like slowly, and I was starting to hear like the doctors and nurses and anesthesiologists communicating, and I'm just talking, and I can hear them like loud and clear finally, and I'm like, oh, y'all can hear me? And they all bust out laughing. So I started cracking up, and I was just like cutting up, talking about Cheetos and random things at that point. Cause hey, I'm just, you know, getting my life cut open here. What else is there to do? I remember asking like several times, did I die? Did I die? Did I die? And then on the anesthesiologist is like, no, you weren't even close to dying. Like I've seen people that have been like super close to dying. You were nowhere near it. I'm like, huh? So the conclusion I come up with is that God is so great, right? And it's not even a conclusion. It's more of a revelation. And I just got this last week as I was just like treading backward, you know, talking to one of my sister friends about all of this. And we just kind of sharing our experiences in this whole situation. I remember the Lord just telling me in that time last week with her, I was giving you relief from the agony that you were experiencing, you know, on the OR table. And that thing that you were talking to was one of my angels. And just like in the book of Hebrews, angels are ministering spirits. They're here to serve us. They're here to serve human beings. And God gave me some relief. And he was like, that's the reason why you were able to physically talk and hear yourself, but you weren't able to hear the angel. You didn't have to. They don't communicate the way you communicate in the earth realm. But because you were still in the earth realm and I just gave you like almost like an outer body experience, you were able to talk and hear yourself. You weren't dead, you know. He's kind of explaining it to me like that. It's like I just gave you some relief. So I literally had an outer body experience. It was pretty dope. I legit thought I died, but it wasn't nothing scary about it. It was cool though. So I came back, like I told you, talking about Cheetos and random stuff, cutting up with all the doctors and stuff. And at the last like 15 minutes of the surgery, I could feel everything. It felt like they were burning me shut with fire. And I was like starting to cry and I was starting to scream, and it was pretty bad. And then I was done. I don't remember going to the recovery room, but I do remember like them kind of changing my gown, and because I had vomited all over it, and like, let's get you cleaned up, sweet girl. Changing my gown and trying to clean the vomit out my hair and putting me on one of them big old Chucks pads and some drawers, them little net drawers you have after you have a baby. And I was just like out of it. I don't know what I was talking about, but I was having a hard time, like, not breathing, but just that cough, because I was still pretty numb, and that was really annoying. I was like legit lower respiratory infection, C-section, partial hysterectomy. Horrible combination, by the way. I remember going into recovery, seeing my husband finally again, because he had to leave at a certain point. Seeing my sister friends, and them jokers never left. Like we've been through some things. They can't go nowhere now. We stuck together. And I've seen everything. And I remember just calling my family, you know, and calling, like, and telling them every detail from every detail. And I'm high as a kite because I done had so many drugs injected in me. But I'm just like, you know, calling out the story and telling them all of everything with like no filter. And I'm like, I guess emotionally numb too, because I was just talking like, you know, I just had, I don't know, gotten my blood pressure taken. Like nothing, like I wasn't acting like it was such an intense thing, but that was that. I had to wait for transport to come get me from Patewood to take me to Granville Memorial. I feel like it was 8 o'clock by the time we got to Granville Memorial. And then I had to go through... Oh, sorry. Let me back up, shawty. I had to have 6 blood transfusions and some plasma as well. I got to Granville Memorial, had to get another couple of blood transfusions and some other stuff. I don't really remember. It's a big blur. I really think I need to do a mini documentary on this part of the labor story. Because my husband has his perspective, you know, because he had to see the baby being resuscitated. Like, he saw the baby gray and like a purplish grayish color. He saw him when he was dead. Hence why we call him Little Lazarus. He was dead and now he's alive. Hallelujah. So I want to hear things from his perspective. I want to hear things from my sister friend's perspective, because they saw things that I did not see. They were able to feel things spiritually that I could not articulate, you know. And I feel like I'm not doing a great job at expressing this part of the story, although this is the like most prominent detrimental part of the story. So maybe we'll get together and do that. But got to Memorial, more blood transfusions, rocked out for a little bit. The baby went to the NICU, you know, hours before I even got there. And I went to the NICU at about 11:30 that night, where I met one of the most beautiful souls I've ever known. I know she's listening to this too, and she'll know I'm talking about her as I describe the next few details. So I'm wheeled to the NICU, to my baby's little area in the pinwheel. If you've ever been a NICU mom at Prisma Health, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And he's just laying there, and he, oh my God. He's laying there and he's like trying to open his eyes, and his nurse, who is this beautiful soul I'm about to tell y'all about, she says, "Touch him." And I'm like, "I can't, like I'm scared." And I started to cry. And she was like, "No, you have to." I'm like, I can't. And I'm just crying. And she grabs my hand and she puts my hand on the baby. And I just bawl my eyes out. And she looks me dead in the eyes and she says, "You got to listen to your nurses, listen to your doctors, take your meds. And, you know, basically be obedient to what they're saying so you can heal, because he's going to need you." And that never left me. So I went back to my room, got back into bed. And when the next day started, I was obedient to those very words. I made sure that I was staying on top of my pain medications and eating and, you know, doing all the things. And it still hadn't hit me, like, the intensity of, like, how sick the baby was. I do like I was saying before, like, just seeing his eyes, like, when I touched him, his eyes were open. He was, like, trying, you know, to do something, to communicate something. And then he closed. And I didn't see his eyes open again. That was December 21st. I didn't see his eyes open again until December 28th. And I think I might have to stop here, because I'm in a moment and I'm hurting just thinking about it. I'm hurting and then I'm sad and I'm feeling scared all over again. And wow, it does feel unfair. To carry a baby full term, have all these plans, you know, have his nursery all ready, have people give you all these gifts, to have his hospital bag packed and yours too, and with the idea that you're gonna go home, you know, once you push this baby out. Spend maybe 2 days in the hospital and you're home and you start your new life with this new baby and your other wonderful children, and that did not happen. It is March 11th and I just got home with this baby on March 5th, from December 21st to March 5th. He's been in the NICU fighting for his life and defying odds. We'll get to all that part. We'll get to the good stuff. But this is a moment just where I just didn't know what was next. Going to the NICU the next day, you know, after I had him. And to see him not really responding. I mean, what are you supposed to do with that? I gotta stop here. Because there's too many more details that are coming up that I have to share, but I can't right now. My heart is broken. A little PTSD going on, but it's important for you to know this. I hope I've done a good job at expressing what happened from the OR to the NICU. I feel like I'm all over the place, but hopefully you get the gist of what I'm saying. I prayed over this podcast for clarity, to be manifested in your heart, in your ears, in your mind, for you to receive what you need to receive from this. And we'll pick up next week. Until next time.
Hey there, friend. Glendon Raphael is home sweet home. Him sweet boy is home. And he's doing great. Thank you so much for your support. Thank you for your prayers. Keep those prayers coming. We need them. He needs them. Child, I need them. I feel like a stranger in my own home. It's crazy. One of my daughters asked me if I was coming to babysit. I mean, what do you do with that? I don't know. Anyhow, if you'd like to support Glendon Raphael, if you'd like to support any member of my family, including myself, if you'd like to support this podcast, you can do so by clicking the button that says support, and you can give as much money as you would like to us. Thank you so much for your anticipation for part two. I hope you're just as thrilled to hear part three, and we'll see you. We won't see you. We'll talk to you. No, not we. I will. I'll talk to you next time. Thank you for tuning in to the Once Upon Her Mind podcast.